out of her business clothes and into a comfortable terry cloth robe, and to fix a light dinner tray. Far into the night she sat studying, memorizing facts, numbers, dates, names. The dinner tray sat on the desk untouched. A noise. Just a soft whisper, really, but it made her jerk her head up and glance around the little room. The window was closed and locked. It must have been something down on the street, Jane thought. Nothing to be alarmed about. Still, she got up from the desk and walked through the apartment, checking all the windows, and especially the French doors that led out onto the balcony. Then she went back to her computer and accessed her own security system. All the lights were green. Everything was fine. "You're being melodramatic," Jane told herself. On the roof of the apartment building, two Japanese men in ordinary business suits walked slowly along the edge, speaking quietly of their plans to enter the martial arts tournament in Saigon during their vacation time. A third sat in the deep shadow of the air conditioner shed, visible only by the tiny red glow of his cigarette. Down on the street, across from the building's front entrance, another pair of Japanese, one of them a woman, loitered in a dark doorway. In the alley behind the building, a lone Japanese man prowled, fading into the shadows at the slightest sound. In an apartment on the first floor of Jane's building, an older Japanese man sat in front of a TV screen. He seemed to be drowsing, except that every few moments he lifted his hand to inspect the small black electronic box it held. Six green lights shone steadily. All was well with the people he had deployed. His TV screen showed the lobby of the apartment building, quiet and empty except for the concierge, who was truly asleep behind his desk. Jane knew nothing of this. Nobuhiko had informed her that she was being guarded, but she had never noticed any bodyguards. She had the right to ask for protection from the GEC security department, but she feared that Gaetano had infiltrated that office before any of the others. So she checked her electronic security system, then shut down her computer and went to her bedroom. For the first time in her life, she felt personally endangered. It was not exciting. It was frightening. She wished there were some way to avoid the danger that she knew was pressing in on her. But Gaetano and his criminals had to be exposed, she told herself. If we're going to save the world, we've got to get rid of the crooks. She knew that her real reason was Dan. He loves me and he needs me. He'll get himself killed if I don't help him. The silly fool, butting his head against the GEC and the Mafia and anyone else who stands in his way. Silly, stubborn, egotistical, glorious, wonderful fool. She stopped and looked at herself in her bedroom mirror. "And what are you?" she asked the image. "Just as foolish as he is." Then she laughed, knowing that this was the way it had to be. The phone buzzed. She called out, "Answer!" And the screen lit up with, "Must see you at midnight at Sacré-Cœur. Imperative you-know-who.
Dan's here. He's back in Paris."
The digital clock on the phone said 11:18. Jane called for a taxi as she whipped out of her robe and hurriedly pulled on a cinnamon turtleneck blouse and suede skirt. She was out the front door of her apartment building by 11:29, tugging on a leather coat. A taxi was waiting at the curb.
"Sacré-Cœur,"
she said as she ducked into the cab's back seat. The elder man in the first floor apartment was galvanized into action when he saw Jane race across the lobby. He pressed the emergency button on his handheld communicator and dashed to the stairs that led down to the lobby. The couple in the doorway sprinted out into the street. The man took a snapshot of the departing taxicab while the woman raced for the sleek black sedan they had parked half a block away. By the time she drove up, their chief had come out. The three of them piled into the car and raced after the taxi. The three on the roof came down the elevator to the basement garage. They jumped into their gray minivan, the slamming of their doors echoing through the garage, and roared out into the street, barely slowing down to pick up the man who had come around the building from the alley. Inside the van they had enough communications gear to link directly to a commsat if necessary, and a small arsenal of weaponry.
"This isn't the way to Sacré-Cœur," Jane said.
Said Jane as the streets slid by in the dark, silent night. The driver did not answer. She rapped on the thick plastic partition and said it louder, in French.
Still no reaction from the driver. "Stop!" she hollered.
"Arrête!"
When the driver still played deaf, Jane realized that she was being abducted. She sat rigid on the rear seat of the taxicab, her stomach ablaze with fear. "It's happening. They're kidnapping me." For a moment, she thought this might be Dan's way of spiriting her off to meet him. But Dan wouldn't frighten her. He'd be in the driver's seat himself, grinning into the rearview mirror. She peered at the mirror and saw the driver's dark eyes watching her coldly. His eyes reminded her of Gaetano's. In the car following the taxi, the young Japanese said excitedly, "Don't let them out of your sight!" The woman driving the sedan wanted to snarl at him. Instead, she said nothing and concentrated on her driving, constantly reminding herself that in France one drove on the right side of the road, not the left as in Japan. It was not difficult to follow the taxicab. It was not speeding, and there were hardly any other cars in the streets now, in this quiet part of the city. The difficulty was in following it without letting the driver know he was being followed.
"It's a pity we don't have a bug on the taxi," said the young woman. "Then we could track it without their seeing us."
"Well, we don't," the young man snapped. "Keep your eyes on it, or we'll lose them."
In the back seat, their chief was speaking through his wrist communicator to the other four in the van, following some distance behind them. "You must assume that the abductors will notice us following them, and be prepared for a fight when they finally come to stop. Under no circumstances are you to risk the life of the Scanwell woman. Non-lethal weapons only. Understood?" A single, "Hey!" issued from the wrist comm's tiny speaker, like the voice of a sprite or a gremlin. Past the city limit the taxi drove. Past the sprawling modern suburbs that ringed Paris, gaining speed once they were out into the countryside. Jane had tried both doors. They were locked. The driver had not said a word, but his eyes kept flicking up to the rearview mirror. Turning, Jane looked out the back window. Far in the distance, a pair of headlights gleamed, disappeared when the ground dipped, appeared again. "We're being followed," she realized. "Nobo's bodyguards? Dan? Or more of the kidnappers?" The driver picked up a radio microphone and spoke into it. His words were muffled by the plastic partition, but Jane thought she detected the musical cadences of Italian. "He's calling for help," she thought. She looked at her watch. Its glowing digits said 12:29. They had been driving for exactly an hour. The night was dark out here. No moonlight lit the countryside. They might be passing spacious farmlands or rivers or anything at all. Jane had no idea where they were or where they were going. Once every few minutes a village flicked by, ancient stone buildings and a few street lamps standing like forlorn sentinels in the night. The taxi whizzed through their narrow, twisting streets without slowing. God help anyone or anything in its path, Jane thought. She caught blurred glimpses of signs bearing names, but they meant nothing to her. Jane's bodyguards knew where she was heading before she did. In the minivan, one of them bent over an electronic map, his finger tracing the road that the sedan and taxi were following. "There's an abandoned airport less than 2 miles ahead on the right," he said into his radio microphone. "They must be heading there." The older man in the back seat of the sedan grunted his agreement. Reaching forward, he tapped the woman driving the car on the shoulder. "Faster! Get closer! They are heading for an airport." At last, the taxi whipped past a chain-link fence where two other cars sat on either side of the gate. An airport? Jane wondered. The road became bumpy. The taxi jounced and rattled. Then she saw a helicopter up ahead, sitting next to a crumbling old building that looked as if it might once have been the control tower of a military airport. A single lamp on a tall pole lit the scene, and she heard gunfire. As the sedan pulled onto the access road to the airport, the two cars that had been parked by the gate pulled together, hood to hood, to block the entrance. Without a word of discussion or command, the young woman swerved the sedan to the left, smashed right through the aged chain-link fence, and plunged into a swirl of dust and gravel past the two parked cars. Men from the two cars turned and fired at them with pistols and assault rifles. The young man in the front seat leaned out his window and fired back with his pistol as the car plunged ahead, swerving and bucking. Bullets slammed into the car. A burst caught the young man, exploding his head into a pulpy spray of blood.
The woman flinched, but did nothing more.